Mr. Rayner Taylor, Reel 10. We were talking about the sort of conditions in the trenches in the Somme area, sort of late 17, early 18. You say in some places there were dugouts. Would there be a dugout for everyone?
Oh, no, no. It depended on where you were, and it depended on... It depended on the ground, whether it was a standard dugout. I had seen German dugouts, which were much better than ours. Much better.
What about the ones that the British built?
Well, usually the company officers had them.
So you wouldn't get them. What would they be like, the ones the officers got?
Very primitive, like a big hole in the ground. It would be strengthened with planks and what have you. And they'd put something in there where they could... They have a candle in, things very, very primitive.
But you wouldn't get them?
Oh, no, no. There were occasions, there were places where there were dugouts for that, but a lot depended on the men themselves, you would get digging them. A lot depended on that.
So what would you get as a dugout if you got a dugout? What would it look like?
Well, a big hole, and where you could just... You could sit down on the floor, of course, and then spend your time there until it came your turn to do sentry on the fire station.
So how big would this hole be?
Was it just there? Then it depended. Some were quite big. Some were quite big. But remember this: the bigger the hole, the more the earth had to be shifted out. You see, you couldn't do that. You couldn't do that at certain times, you know.
So you'd make your own.
Oh, yeah, always made their own.
How would you set about making it?
Well,
which parados?
On the parados side. Oh yes.
That's the back of the
tree. Oh yeah.
Not the front then.
No, no.
Why was that?
Well, I don't know. You wouldn't think of digging under your own line. That seemed to be unthought of. They've always dug at the back of that.
The back of the trench?
Yeah, yeah.
And how far, if you were digging, well, what would you do then? How far would you dig?
Well, as far as it was practicable.
And how far might that be?
Well, as I say, depending. If you were digging... They were usually dug. Well, say you dug the communication trench, and you start digging and you dig and dig till you're sick and tired of digging, and there's perhaps only about six in that particular area. Three perhaps who would be on sentry, fire watch, or whatever you could care to call it. So it wouldn't be very big. It was only when you came to something that was... Your company, the one for the company. But the battalion dugouts, which were further back then, were bigger and rather more elaborate. They'd have a makeshift table so that the powers of me could study their maps and what have you.
So yours would just be a hole big enough for three or four of you?
That's a correct description, a hole.
And would you ever make one just for yourself? A cubby hole, I think.
They may have, some have done it, you know, I don't know. But you're not in it long enough, you see, because you're only in there, you might be only in the front line two nights, and then you're back in reserve. So you depend on who relieves you, whether they're going to continue.
Would you always have some sort of dugout, or sometimes would you be on the fire?
Oh, plenty, often enough, no kind of dugout. Often enough, that.
Where would you put your pack and stuff like that? Can you remember?
Just where you could. Wherever it was convenient.
Well, what about the rations that you got in the trenches? How did they get to you?
They came up at night. A ration party came up at night.
Were you ever on the ration
party? Oh, yes, everybody had it in the turns, you know.
So can you tell me what would happen on a typical ration party?
Well, you go down to the... your battalion distributing place, which would be a lot further, perhaps behind the the support or reserve trenches, and you're given whatever they so much per person, and you had to get this up. Now, very, very rare was it that you got a hot meal. Very, very rare indeed. And the ration parties, they'd come up through the communications, or on a tape line, right over the top, you know, only behind your lines. They're still on the top of the ground. And the tapes would lead them to the entrance to the communication, and then they'd come along there and the rations were distributed to you.
When you were on it, how would you carry the food?
Over your shoulder, just like a sack of coal. And they were carried.
They were in sacks then?
Oh, yes. Sandbags. Sandbag. And there'd be enough in one sandbag for, shall we say, a section of men.
And when you, on the very, very rare occasions you got hot food, how would you bring that up?
It was brought to me in Dixies, and it was always cold when it came up. So it was almost a waste of time bringing it up, you know.
So when you got to the front line, how did you distribute the food amongst the men?
Well, whoever, your corporal or sergeant, they distributed. But
and this would be at night, so you get all your food for the day.
Oh yes,
at night.
At night, yeah.
And what food would that be?
Well, there was a loaf for a start off. Now I must say this, in fairness or whatever, the best bread I've ever had in my life was baked for the British Army in France. And I've never heard anyone criticise it or grumble over it. It was the best tasting bread I have ever had.
What type was it?
They were made in, well, up here we call them cobs. They were like round loaves, and they'd be in about sixes joined together, as though the dough had been put on a, whatever they keep them in, and when they were brought out, they were all fused together, so that all they did was just break them out, and you get so much of a loaf.
How big was an individual loaf around?
It would be about, say 6-8 inches perhaps.
Round across.
Yes, well, around. They were round, round or well. Round squares, you know what I mean? They weren't symmetrical or anything like that. And they used to break them. And depending on the number of men it was, who they were for, then you got so much bread. And there'd be a knob of...
Was it brown bread?
Oh, white. Always white. Oh, I never saw any brown bread in France. Always white. And
what was so good about it? I mean,
perhaps it was so good because the bread in England were, well, it weren't white. It was very dark, different kind of flour altogether. I'll give full marks to the British Army for the bread they baked in France.
Now I know you've said that it depended on how many men.
Yes.
To share it, but yes. How much would you usually get?
Well, say if you've got a loaf, it may do for 8 men.
So that's no more than a slice or two.
Oh, no, it would be about that. And sometimes just a piece of cheese. And sometimes...
How would the cheese come up? In tin?
Oh, in a big slice. Cut up a big slice, you know.
And that'd be in your sandbag?
Oh, yes, and...
What about the butter? You mentioned butter.
Oh, yes, that would be... That'd be stuck in a bit of paper and whatever. It's very primitive. And funnily enough, the number of times that tea and sugar came up to the line, it's beyond belief. Because, you know, no way... Could you brew tea, could light a fire? But he said, they sent Dean Sugar up.
So you didn't use Tommy cookers or anything like that?
Oh, there were no such thing as then. There were no... I don't think they'd been invented then. No.
So you couldn't... What did you do with the tea and sugar when it arrived?
Well, it would be eventually thrown. Nobody wanted it. Because the tea and sugar was mixed together, you know. So much in a pair of paper, and it was screwed up and dropped in the... And I'll tell you another thing that...
How would you get your tea in the line? Did you get tea in the front line? How did you get
I didn't get any tea. On occasions, you might get it when you got into the support. They might get some tea up there. You might get up there, but in front line, very, very rare, very rare indeed. I'll tell you something else I saw in there, not once, many, many times. And it was such a... stupid, silly thing. Now, jam jars, they'd ceased to be glass or pot. They were cardboard. In fact, I noticed in the last war that the same thing was happening. And I have actually seen them cut a jar in halves and they put it in the sandbag. Now, just imagine, it's open, and there's somebody carrying this on their shoulder, slithering and stumbling over all over the place, and when you come to it, when they bring it up to you, you look at this mess that's in there, and you've got to sort it out. Bread, tea and sugar, the paper's broken, and this soggy mass of jam that's come out of there. And that one, it wasn't unusual, it was fairly common. It amazes me today. Amazes me.
The jam was for your bread, was it?
Yes.
What was it like when you got it?
Well, it was a gooey mass of, and invariably, Plum and Apple. What was the name? We used to know the name of the firm. Plum and Apple it was.
Would it be Ticklers?
Ticklers, Plum and Apple jam. Yeah.
And what did you think of Plum and Apple?
Well, there was nothing else. That was all we got. Oh, yes, I think whether it was just a treat or what, greengage jam. I remember getting a ration of that occasionally.
Why do you think they didn't have more...
variety.
More variety or more common forms of jam, such as raspberry straw?
I don't know. I don't know. But Plum and Apple seemed to be the predominant jam. Mm.
Did you like the taste of it? I mean...
Well, you acquired a taste. But mind you, anything tasted better than nothing. And this is why parcels were so very, very...
I'll come back to parcels if I can. What about, still on the food, did you get any tinned food that you had to carry up to the line?
No, because if you did, no tinned food, no. You could buy in your... canteen, when you got out of the line, you could buy some, principally salmon.
Did you not get bully beef in the line then?
Oh yes, occasionally, but not very often. Bully beef. Got a lot of it out of the line, because they made a lot of your cooked food was made with bully beef.
So what did you actually have to eat in the line? Because so far we've only really had the bread.
Well, there's nothing, very little of anything else. Very little of anything else. Oh, no.
You didn't get McConaughey's or anything like that?
Yes, but very rarely in the front line. Very difficult to... very, very difficult to get up to the front line so often, you know. You might get something like that when you got in reserve or close support. You might get it then, but actually in the front line, it was the barest necessities.
What did you think of bully beef, McConaughey's, things like that, pork and beans, when you got them?
It was all right. It was very good because it was a change. It was a change and there's nothing else. I can't imagine now how men stood it like they did. I can, and more especially since reading this thing of George's.
What about water? Did you get any water?
Yeah, we always fill your water bottle. Yes, and then they would bring water up in carriers.
What did it taste? Did it taste unusual?
No, no. And then there was water. It's a strange thing, water. There's always water in the shallows, you know. Invariably, there's water there. Which would be... It's astonishing that there weren't more dysentery and things like that.
You wouldn't drink water from the shallows.
Oh, they'd drink anything if you were thirsty.
Did you get thirsty?
Oh, yes, occasionally.
Have you ever drunk water from shallows?
Probably. I couldn't quote any particular time. I probably had done, you know. This was a quiet sector of the line, mind you.
What about other rations, like rum? Did you get any rum ration?
No, not until there was a big... there was a big flap on. You might get a ration then, but... rum wasn't issued. People popularly suppose. In the winter, you got it now and again, you know.
Did you take it when it was given?
Oh, yes.
Did it have any effect on you?
Oh, yes. A very, very warm effect. Wonderful. Just one sip of it and you warm all over, because it was more like treacle. It was good stuff. So these topers told me it was good stuff. I was frightened of drinking much. I had to get a bit drunk. But you didn't get much. He didn't give you much.
How was it issued?
You just lined up with anything that you had for drinking. If you had a tin mug or something like that, you know, there was no such thing as giving you a set bottle or something like that. No, that didn't happen.
What about cigarettes? Or did you get a cigarette ration?
Yes, cigarettes were fairly... No, they were distributed regularly. But not in abundance. I couldn't say in what... Oh, cigarettes would come up in the rations. And so, well, you could imagine what they were like in that soggy mess. There were varieties of cigarettes, none of which were the popular brand, like... A Gold Flake or Woodbines were the main cigarettes in those days, but the issues to the forces were different brands, all sorts of. And we used to say they were sweepings up off the floor, you know. But it was a cigarette. But tobacco was a generous issue, because there weren't as many people that smoked a pipe who smoke cigarettes. It was around this time when I began to smoke a pipe, for that reason alone. I could get pipe tobacco, but cigarettes were very scarce. And I have actually seen men get pipe tobacco, which was, it was like shag tobacco that they... And I've seen them spread it on a paper, brown paper or a newspaper, and roll it and tie bits of string round it and smoke that. I've seen that not once, dozens of times. Dozens of times I've seen that done. I sent home. My dad was a pipe smoker, and I sent home to him. Could he send me a pipe? He did, one of his. You couldn't buy them then, you know. He sent me one. And he was a twist smoker, now twisted, very, very strong tobacco. Well, he got this pipe and he must have cleaned it out, you know, and scraped it out and sent it to me. I've got a pipe. And I remember the first pipeful I had. I thought it was wonderful. And before I'd finished smoking that pipe while I was green, oh, it didn't make me pull it, because it was a pipe which was seasoned by strong tobacco. And then me filling it made me very poor. And I was weeks and weeks and weeks before I got used to smoking a pipe. Of course, I understand that that does happen to people starting smoking a pipe. It takes them quite a long time. But I've been smoking one ever since then.
Did you give up cigarettes when you started?
No, no, but nobody ever gave me... nobody did me a kindness giving me a cigarette. It didn't taste anything. And doesn't today. I won't accept a cigarette. I said, no, I'd rather not, because they do nothing for me.
And so you smoked the pipe in the front line?
Oh, yes, yes. And it's surprising the number of young fellows and boys who did begin to smoke pipes then, through that. And I tell you, I've smoked a pipe ever since, and now I enjoy... I love my pipe. When I hear these campaigns for stopping smoking, I could scream. I don't know whether you smoke or not, and no, that's, there you are, but me,
What sort of equipment would they have in the trench? You know, ammunition supply and things like that.
Well,
hand grenades, things like that.
Oh, yes, there's always, you took your ammunition up with you, you know. And you took it up in... They were rag bandoliers. They were made of cloth. And you slung them round your... This is besides your ammunition in your pouches. But this was extra. And...
What about hand grenades? Would that store be handed over each time?
Oh, yes, yes. There'd always be some hand grenades talking about, you know. Oh, aye. But the ammunition... And then sometimes the ammo parties used to come up as well. Along with Russian parties, you know, make sure there was plenty of supply of ammunition.
How did your uniform stand up to trench life?
Well, except for being lousy...
I'll come back to
it
that.
It was good... it was a good material. Very hot, but very hot in the summer, you know. Very hot in the summer, but... It was good cloth, you know. There was no doubt about that.
So it didn't wear out too much?
Oh, no, no. No, it didn't... No, it wouldn't wear, and it didn't tear very easily either. No, the cloth that the uniforms were made of was very, very good.
Were you expected to try and wash and shave while you were in the front line?
No, no. You did that. That was a personal thing. Because there'd be no water for the purpose of washing, you know. There wouldn't be enough for that. And shaving, well, nobody bothered you about that. No. But when you came out, of course, you spent the first day sprucing up. They didn't have you cleaning your boots.
So in the line, you didn't bother?
No. You just, in the line, you were there for one purpose, and one purpose only, and that was to stop the other fella coming over.
What about latrines? What arrangements were made for latrines?
Now, very, very, very primitive.
Could you describe them?
Well, there were no latrines in the trenches, you know. Oh, no.
What would happen then?
Well, if you wanted to go to a lavatory, you'd do it somewhere and throw it over the parapet, you know. Oh, no, nobody... They wouldn't have that. And it saved me the water. And often enough, and I've seen this done, I've seen German helmets used as lavatories. I've seen that often enough.
So didn't the regiment, because a lot of regiments would dig a latrine off a communication trench.
Oh, yes, but I never saw anything like that, you know. No.
Not even just a hole in a side trench?
No.
So
it was a very... and the more I think about it now, and the more I've studied this problem, I realise what a problem it must have been, you know, to get without personal refuge, you know. It must have been. and something I never saw done. I never saw toilet paper come up. I never saw that at all.
So what would they use?
Whatever they could. Whatever method they could, they were using. They have to. Well, this is why, since then, I read of the commissioning of an attack somewhere. One of the third, one of the early conditions were a supply of toilet paper. And to anyone who's never experienced it, you wouldn't think that mattered so much, but it does. Very, very much so. Cleanliness. And nobody didn't. I don't know how people studied.
So they didn't bury it, they threw it over the thing?
Threw it over the top, I shook it out of here.
That mean it was rather all, wasn't there a smell and no man's land, a bit of
well,
a mess?
Well, there was always a smell. There was always a smell.
What was the smell of?
Well, a smell, that's all you could say, a bad smell. Yeah.
So would that be how you disposed other waste, you know, any other waste you had?
Oh, yes, yeah.
It was always just thrown into no man's
land. Oh, yes, yes.
It was thrown forward, not back.
Oh, you didn't throw it backwards, throw it forward.
What about, we mentioned lice before about how soon you got them. When you were in the trench for a while, did you have any methods for trying to get rid of them?
Oh, yes. Cigarettes along the seam of your trousers. A candle along the seam of your trousers. Because all along, not only your trousers, everything you had, they used to lay eggs, the eggs lay in line down the seams. And when anybody, and particularly when you're out of the line, it seemed the accepted thing. You went to the toilet and you have your trousers down and you're burning these lines of lice. You never got without them.
Did you have to be careful not to ruin the seams? I mean,
well, often enough the seams are so caked with candle grease from what you've done before, you know. And when you came out of the line, if you went in billets, which would be bounds or anything, you were given a blanket, and blankets were always wrapped, they used to say, in bundles of 10. They used to bundle the blankets up when you were going back in the line, and then they were kept waiting for you coming out. And you got these, and when you got in under them at night, you could feel they were absolutely alive with lice, the blankets were. They were never washed, you know. And if you got a change of underclothing, oh, you got this when you came out with the line. They give you a shirt, which had been to the wash. And it didn't, even washing them didn't kill the lice. Because when you got your clean shirt on, your body heat brought the lice alive in the shirt. And it wasn't going. I wonder where they all went to. Because everybody, I never knew a solitary person who was absolutely lousy. I never knew one. When I went to France at first, knowing what my brothers were, I thought, oh,